Happy Monday to you, and welcome back to the DriveCast. My name is Dean. I'm the lead pastor here at LifePoint. I do the majority of teaching at our Lewis Center campus. And first of all, I appreciate you being with us throughout the summer, and it is great to be back and to be back with you here on the DriveCast. And we started a brand new series this week called The Good Life, looking at the book of Job over the next 5 weeks. And one of the questions that we're asking in this series is, what if the good life demands difficult moments? I think we tend to equate a good life with a comfortable life. So really, in the first chapter of Job, we focused on the first question that human beings tend to ask, which is, why? When we suffer, when we hurt, why me, why him, why her, why this, why now? And Job addresses that like no other book of the Bible does. And so we talked about really three things. We talked about there are really common answers to suffering from a human perspective, but then we have an uncommon God who also has an answer, and his answer is the only one that really explains why. And when you think about Job and you think about Job's story, right, and the two stages kind of that go on, I talked about it like the live game on a football field, and then there's the coaching box, right? They call it the game within the game, right? You bounce between these two, you know, stage of Job's life on the field, and then this conversation between, you know, God and Satan, really, that's up in the coaching box that Job doesn't see or know about, right, or understand. And so of all the things that Job goes through, right, his financial loss, his family loss, you know, if anyone ever had a reason to say why, it was Job. And, you know, I think as human beings, our common answers to why are, you know, there's morality. You know, some religious groups are going to say, well, God's blessings in our lives really parallel our obedience, right? So people start trying to push the religious buttons. Maybe I pray more, go to church more, whatever. And then there's the cynical answer, you know, which is maybe the irreligious answer, where people just think, you know, blessings are really just a product of chance. Like life is really just, you know, a roll of the dice. And so, you know, Job, it's not just his, you know, that he loses his family, which is terrible in this storm, or that he loses, you know, his financial world, which is also, but, you know, even his health, you know, he ends up losing that. And I think the uncommon answer from God about suffering is, you know, that God simultaneously permits and limits suffering in our lives. That he didn't create a world with death, disease, or you know, natural disasters. Like, those things were unleashed in our rebellion in the Garden of Eden. And at the same time, God is totally in control. But here's the paradox, that God permits and limits suffering to what degree? Only to the degree that his enemy gets exactly the opposite of what the enemy's after. I mean, if you know the story of Job at all, you know that in the end of the story, Job really comes out shining like a star. Job is not Job at the beginning of the book. Because of what he goes through, that is really the lesson that teaches us. So what does that mean for you and me? Well, it must be true then that God permits and limits suffering in our lives for what purpose? That the enemy gets exactly what he wants? No, that he gets exactly the opposite of what he wants. That God uses suffering in Job's life to make him what he would not otherwise become. So God uses suffering in our lives to make us what we would never otherwise become. And here's really the irony, is that Job never knows. Not even in the end of the book, when there's resolution, does Job really ever know why? And the truth is, Job can't know why. Because if he does, then it really is just an endurance test, right? And really, that's Satan's accusation. Hey, you know, you're hedging Job about like it's an I scratch your back, you scratch mine. You know, that's why Job loves you. And, you know, his accusation is that Job is just networking God, essentially. He's just using God for his value. So the only way that could be tested, because God says differently about Job, right? God says, hey, there is none like him on earth, blameless and upright, who fears God. So God believes better about Job. The only way for that to be tested is not only for the blessings to be taken away, but Job can't know why. Job can't know that actually, hey, Job, in the end of the book, the joy that you're going to experience, you're going to receive twice as much in blessings as you. If Job knew that, then, you know, the accusation of Satan could say, well, he already knew, you know, he knew what was coming. So I think what's important for us to recognize is that, you know, when we have pain, suffering, right, in our lives, we can't know why. But what we do have to understand is that we trust that God's doing in our lives what we couldn't do it. So we've got to become Christians primarily for God's sake and not for the blessings. It's so interesting that God goes to Eve in the Garden of Eden and says, hey, listen, God doesn't want you to eat of this tree. But he's just trying to hold you back. He doesn't want you to become like him. He doesn't want you to become in control of him. That's very interesting because essentially the God or Satan says the same thing to God about Job, right? He doesn't love you for you, but God believes different. See, you and I have a resource that Job never had because centuries later, Satan comes along and assaults another man, the only truly innocent man. And just like Job is naked and alone in chapter 1, Jesus hangs naked and alone on a cross. Because really for 38 chapters in the book of Job, Job says, God, why? Why? And Jesus from the cross cries out, my God, why? Here's the difference. At the end of the book, Job gets a response from God that begins in chapter 38 and goes a few chapters. Jesus never gets a response on the cross. He's abandoned to death, the ultimate proof that God loves you and me. That's the resource that we have. When you know, when you're convictional about the reality that God loves you, then that changes everything. So when someone criticizes you, right, you have a love that's deeper than their love because you know God loves you and that's more important. So when you don't have as much as you compare to somebody else financially, you know that you have an eternity full of riches because God proved it on the cross through his son. So I want to pray that reality into our day and then you can pray afterwards. Father, I pray that we are a people today that are convinced, that we are convictional that you love us no matter what we face. And Lord, when we believe that, that means that the beliefs that also come along is that we believe that no matter what comes into our lives, good or bad, terrible or awful, that you're going to use that. It doesn't make the pain go away. It doesn't make it easier, God. It just means that we love you the most. So God, I pray for anybody who's listening today, maybe who's going through something incredibly difficult. Maybe a lot of people know about it. Maybe nobody knows about it. But God, we are grateful that you know and that you're with them. And I pray, God, that we'll walk in the reality of your love. Now you take the opportunity to pray.